Welcome to the Geeks of the North, a hobby and gaming podcast from La Belle Provence. This week I'm here with Antoine and Steve, and we're talking about gaming tables. So why don't you sit back, relax, grab a paintbrush, and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of Geeks of the North. As always, I'm your host, Paul Filio. And this week, I'm here with my co-host, Antoine Bergeron.
Hello!
And my other co-host, B-Steve.
Hi, guys.
So, we got a fun-filled episode planned for you. We're going to be doing all the usual stuff, the hobby time, the news. And then we're going to be talking about something that's near and dear to every miniature Wargamer's heart, and that's building tables. And, what you can use to build your table with, and what are some different ideas we've seen and done ourselves. So hopefully you'll find that interesting, as Yom has told us that we're lacking hobby content lately. So, that being said, let's get the show started, and we're going to go right into the segment that we keep forgetting is there, but it's there, because it's in the show notes, Antoine's Cool Stuff Found This Week.
Yes, this week... it's a War Machine army, Junkyard Convergence of Cyrus. It's I'm not really fond of that army. The Art Deco look of them, kind of retro sci-fi. But that the painter, which for Mendel is Ramtastic, is painting them in really like... The junkyard term is really good. So they're all kind of green, beige, and metallic, but everything is dirty, paint scraps, weathering, and some really strong red glow effects.
Okay, that is the one I was thinking of.
Together makes for a really great look that's really different from what we see usually for that army. And lately, in the most recent post of the is thread on the Privateer Press forum, he is also doing a step by step while painting the battle engine, which is really cool because you can see all the steps how he do his withering and what color he's using, what technique he's using. Like he's using salt chipping for most of the withering for the armor plates and stuff like that. So. It has a really, really cool look and a really different look.
There's some lovely rust effect on there too.
Yes, and he explains which paint he used for that. That's straight diluted paint, so no big secret there. So yeah. It's a really, really interesting army.
Yeah, and it looks like it's got some salt chipping. Just some painted on weathering, some washes, a little bit of stippling. So it's a lot of basic techniques put to good effect.
Yes.
And I've looked into it, and the red, I don't know for you guys, but it just scream lead, like this with lead. But I know it's not feasible because most of them are metal.
Most of those are plastic.
Okay. So you could put lead to even more... emphasis on the red glow effect.
Oh, yeah, in some of them, yes.
Oh, sorry, I'm like lead. I'm thinking lead like miniatures. No, you mean
LED. No,
LED. LEDs. Like lights. LED, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But I don't think that the glow would be as big. You wouldn't have also the effect in most when the lightning is up.
Yeah, his OSL is a bit extreme.
But it goes with the...
Oh, it fits the look.
The scheme.
No, for sure. And like you said, it's a very different take than what we usually see for this army, which is usually painted in just all silver or bluish silver.
Mm-hmm. So which is kind of dull a bit.
Yeah, so. It's nice to see someone thinking outside the box, right?
Yeah. So as usual, we'll have a link probably on Facebook, on all our social medias, and in the show notes for people to go see that thread.
Awesome. All right. So going into hobby time, I've actually done a little bit of hobby this time, not a whole heck of a lot, but some. So, still working on those knights.
I feel it's going to be an ongoing subject for the rest of the year.
Yeah, it's really not supposed to be. I work on them for like 10 minutes, then I go on to other stuff. I passed my I have like a 4-hour limit on models usually, with a few exceptions, and I hit that limit, and I got bored with the knights.
So already?
Yeah. So, you know, I've got them based now, and, you know, 3 different types of flock, some cork. I say flock, 3 different types of gravel, like different grits. And now I've just got to do another layer of PVA glue to kind of cement that, and then some painting. And after that, it's just a few more washes, some oil washes on them, and decals. So they're getting there. They'll be done eventually.
Yeah, since you're playing a lot against Yom, I think you should add the dead orc at the bottom on the base or something like that.
Yeah, maybe have him standing on an orc or something.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, or you know, wearing Gazgul as a trophy or something. We'll think of something. And aside from that, I actually started assembling a Reaver Titan for 40k. And that model is monstrous. I mean, it's no Warlord Titan, you know, that's for sure. But it is a big model, and I was really surprised by how big and how intricate that model was. There are so many pieces and so many little details. To be quite honest, I'm half tempted just to not paint the interior and just glue it all shut so no one ever sees it, so that it doesn't matter.
It would save you time.
Yeah, but I'd feel
and make painting guilty. And but assembly
you
easier.
Would feel unfinished and unaccomplished.
Yeah, I'm struggling with like the internal demons about it.
You could just fill it out. Also, if you want to be sure, it's not there, but you can see it. Just fill it.
Just fill it?
Yeah, with putty or something like that. So, you know, there's an empty space there.
I'm not rich enough to buy that much putty, dude. The inside is quite...
Use foam, little foam for wall, expanding foam. Or
okay,
like
yeah.
That.
Yeah.
No.
Expanding foam.
Don't do that all in green stuff.
Like, it's like $150 worth of green stuff, yeah. Well, the thing is, I can just not put the interior in. It's all separate pieces.
Well, that's even easier then.
Yeah, but no, I'll get them in there. And...
Well, you can keep them outside and do a diorama or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say.
You need something for ReaperCon next year.
Oh. Wow, that's a shot below the belt.
Well, at least this time you would have something to prepare for and bring.
Yeah, I still don't know what I want to do for that. It'd be nice to bring something. We'll have to see. And hopefully you guys can come down with me this year. Or at least some of you.
Yeah, more the hobby and painting guy than the tournament guy.
Well, you're welcome to come, Steve. I just don't think it's your type of show.
Exactly.
You don't have an active game anymore anyway, so...
So might as well switch to hobbying instead of playing.
Oh, man, Antoine, that's too soon, buddy. Too soon. Yeah, wow.
And on that killer note...
Yeah, all I'm thinking about is poor Logan, who spent all that time designing the comp for the Capital City Bloodbath Age of Sigmar event, and then quit playing the game. It's been a hard week for Age of Sigmar. You know, but by all accounts, it's doing well. GW says it's doing well.
And I see leagues starting on the web also, and people are getting into it. So some people are liking it.
Yeah. And I mean, we're not in the news section yet, but I saw today leaked a document, some sort of balancing system from Games Workshop, apparently.
Yeah, that hasn't been confirmed, though.
Yeah. I mean, the formatting looks right, and but anyone can do that with enough time.
Yeah.
And it's so convoluted that it makes me think it's something GW would do.
That's a good point.
You know?
I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's bad, Steve. It's like, you know, if you've got more different factions than your opponent... You know, your opponent gets a plus one. Or, you know, there's a bunch of, like,
if modifiers, he has more right? special characters, if he has more monsters, number of war scrolls, etc., etc., etc. Okay.
And then, basically, you compare the numbers at the end, and the guy who has, like, the most disadvantage gets to take special abilities from a list.
Oh, wow.
You know, on a one-for-one basis. So if he's got, you know, two more points than you do, well, then he gets two...
Pick of these two laws of war.
Yeah, two laws of war. That's what they're called.
It works a bit like the difference in point size. You would get asset in the old version of Apocalypse.
Yeah, exactly. It's a similar concept to that.
Or in Blood Bowl, where you get more cash. More...
Oh, yeah. Free advantage when you're downplaying in team score. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Or so it's value. Along those lines. So the it looks like something GW would do, but we don't know if it's official yet. So okay. Maybe by the time this publishes, it will be official, but... All right. Yeah, so back to what I was talking about. I've been working on the Titan. A really cool model. Like I said, really, really big. It'll be a lot of fun to work on.
Are you going to put only 4 hours on that one?
Probably. Well, it depends. If I don't do the inside, yeah, that's a 4-hour jobby.
Yeah, you said that for the knights.
Oh, the knights, I decided I wanted to do freaking chevrons on and all kinds of...
And you won't do that on your super cool giant knight, giant titan?
I don't know what I want to do for a color scheme. I may just go for the typical blue and yellow or gray and yellow out of the book and forego all the Adeptus Mechanicus looking type stuff. Anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, you're not there yet.
Yeah, exactly. I got a long way to go. It's a lot of resin to clean.
Oh, it's not clean yet?
Oh, no. I mean, I washed it all, but I've been you know, trimming mold lines, filing, dry fitting everything.
Okay.
It's a lot of parts. I've got most of the main body done, or all the main body done now, and the head, and the components that go on the inside of the main body. I haven't done the inside of the cockpit yet, or any of the legs, pistons, hips, things. Yeah, so there's a lot of pieces to clean.
And half the model is legs, is it?
Yeah, and there's pistons everywhere, and you have to like cut them to length. It's going to be good fun.
Yeah. Those have dry fitting and cutting to length, etc., etc.
Exactly. And
do you need to cut it at angles?
Yeah, I think so.
I have a small...
A jeweler saw?
A jeweler saw, but I also have a miter box. Is that the name?
Oh, a miter box. Yeah.
Yeah. Done for a being. So it's a tiny size.
Yeah. I remember seeing that.
Yeah, I bought that to make the Space Station Yamato that I gave to Yom.
Right.
Because I had to cut plastic hard at sharp angles. So you can borrow that.
That's a great idea. I'll take you up on that offer. Moving right along, I also spent some time assembling some Relic Knights. I bought into that Kickstarter, and I think I've mentioned it a few times now. And I had a Black Diamond and a Pirates faction for the game. So I decided
Corsairs.
I decided to assemble some of the Black Diamond. So I've got about 35. Well, I'm aiming to get about 35 points assembled.
Oh, more than that.
It was 50 points. It was 50 points, sorry.
Yeah.
Because I've got about 35 or so assembled, then I realized I didn't actually have my leader character assembled yet.
Mm-hmm.
So one shot is left to assemble. And she's probably, you know,
she's probably 18 to 20 points.
Exactly. Like she's probably the difference right there.
Mm-hmm. Or if you go for one of the smaller knights, the questing knights, they're around 15 points also.
Yeah, but one shot is so cool looking.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I'm kind of sad I gave away my resin and metal one to 80% G. But on the other hand, I know that one's a pain in the butt to assemble, so maybe it's a good thing I gave it away.
Yeah, it looks better though.
Yeah. It's a trade-off, right? Durability versus
more details.
Yeah, for sure. That's another great piece you could have used at the ReaperCon.
Yeah, I don't think I could do that piece justice, though. I don't know.
Well, after the chibi anime class with Liz.
Why? Except it's not really chibi.
No, but some of the same principle apply in the anime's color scheme. Maybe not the eyes or
everything. Yeah, that's true. I mean, there are chibi features of those, what are they called?
The ciphers.
The ciphers, yeah. Which are kind of SD looking bonums. My guy kind of looks like Marvin Martian, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, kind of, but with the World War II team.
Yeah. He's got the big helmet, that's all I remember.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't really see the eyes and the small gun and the trench coat.
Yeah, exactly.
Fritz, I think.
Fritz is his name. Yes, that's right. And that was it. That's all I did for hobby. Games was easy because I didn't get any in again.
Well, to be honest, you put something else in the notes.
Oh. Yeah, I jokingly put in that I burned my fantasy armies as part of my hobby.
That's funny, Paul.
Yeah, well, I may have considered it once or twice, but it didn't actually happen. Yeah, I still can't believe people rage quit so hard about that game.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So, Antoine, you're up.
Okay, I painted in the past episode, I mentioned working on a dead jack, Craig's dead jack for War Machine, assembling it, all the pain it was to assemble. Well, the painting was the contrary. It was pretty easy. It went really well. It's a big piece, but the paint scheme was the color scheme was pretty simple with mostly metallics. Everything on the model is metallic except the OSL and one tiny skull on a spike. There was one skull on a spike that was not metallic. So, and I'm not pretty good. But I'm at ease painting metals, so it was easy to do.
Oh, anyone who's looked at your Helga knows you're good at your metallics.
Yeah.
Well, stop with the false modesty.
Yeah. The model is done. I met the owner last week and forgot to varnish it. So it's back home. I need to varnish it and bring it back this week for the next league night.
Was that...
Sadly.
Was that Dan?
Daniel Mayer, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was all happy. It was all packed. And there, giving it in his hand, I realized that, oh, it's not varnished. Damn.
So, and I know you were all happy you were going to go to give it to him that night on Thursday. Yes. And yeah. Oh, well. There's always this week, Antoine.
Yeah, well, if our plans for Sunday still works, I might not be able to go Thursday for the gaming night. So we'll see. I might just do a quick round trip just to bring the model to him. We'll see with the baby. Maybe. Next thing I worked, we're in a journeyman league at Gamers Vault or local store, and I went again with my pigs with a different caster, like I mentioned last time. And that caster, new Team Force, I'm not talking about the War Machine here. The Team Force for Arcadius, the new Team Force nature of the beast, gives you access to a circle beast, the Gorax, which you don't have access usually. And having a beast from another faction in my own army, it was a good case to get the saw out and convert it. So I'm done converting my first Franken Gorax. I added tubing everywhere, put a vial on his back full of strange poison / augmentation liquid from Arcadius to make the Gorax work like he wants. And the second one is all cut up and I'm at the green stuff stage now. I got pieces from bits from the Cephalix monstrosities from Dan Mayer, and I'm trying to see the idea is good, but I think the pieces are a bit too big for the model, so I'm still tying with the idea to do something else. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, because that's the thing with the Gorax, it's not that big a model. It's kind of short.
Yeah, and I had one of the monstrosities has two kind of metallic claws.
Right.
not cutting claws, but the pince.
Yeah, pincers.
Pincers, yeah. Two pincers. And the fitting on the elbow, like the thickness of the arm, is a bit much for the Gorax. So it's already all cut up, but doing test fit, I'm not sure. So I'm still working on that. I might just put it aside and just paint the other stuff I have to get some league points and come back to the Gorax at a later time. I'm not sure yet. And that's it for my hobby. On the game side, I only played one game during the Journeyman League night against Jonathan. He's a newer Kador player. He was playing Vlad, and I was playing Arcadius from my turn trial list. Vlad is from Kador. And we were playing at 25 points. It was my first try with Nature of the Beast, the new Team Force, and wow, did it hit like a truck. Adding the Gorax to the pig is the Gorax Animus give you a bonus to your strength and your melee ability.
Plus one, right?
No, plus two each.
Oh, okay.
And the pigs, especially Warhogs, already have bonus. They can get access to bonus either from Arcadius or through their... they have a strength dial. They can get some damage, but get a strength bonus for the turn. So on 2Ks, I was at plus 6 strength from my base strength for the turn.
Wow.
So
that is brutal.
The 2 Kador jacks didn't stand a chance. I didn't pass my old fury on my single Warhog when I charged and wrecked boat. Red Bow Jack and killed Vlad in 2 attacks, I think. So it was brutal.
That is nuts.
Yeah, I didn't expect that.
Well, I guess he didn't have his Blood of Kings up.
No, it was only the second turn. So he didn't think I could get there. And I didn't think I could reach that far either. But Arcadius Feat lets you frenzy, which is a charge. So I was able, in the end, to charge twice towards Vlad, which gave me the range to get in melee with him and kill him with one of my Warhog.
So you did the charge to get the 7-inch move or whatever?
Yeah, I got the frenzy in there. When you frenzy toward the closest model.
Yeah.
But I had one of my small razor boar that frenzied in that general direction to get to the nearest model. And the Warhog was able to frenzy toward my own razor boar because it was the closest. And after that, during the Warhog Hound activation, I was able to charge whoever I wanted. And after a couple other pieces cleared the path to Vlad, I was able to charge Vlad and end the game on the bottom of turn 2, which was not expected. So,
yeah, I was going to say that. Not a good showing for Vlad.
No, it wasn't. I just want to give a shout out to Jonathan because he was at Gen Con and he brought me back by a ninja shopping Pharaoh Brigand Warlord. So the rules for the model maybe are not that great, but the model does look really cool. So I can't wait to paint that one also and add it to my force.
Yeah, those piggies do look cool.
Yes.
Did you get the Witch Doctor?
No, it's a...
I know it's a Gator thing.
It's a Gator model, and I don't really buy model for the other factions. So, no, I didn't get it. It's cool, and there's 2 pig on it, so I could get it just for the team, but they're kind of the farce on that piece, so it was hurting a bit.
All right.
So, that's it for me. Steve.
Well, for hobby, I finished the Morghast I had to finish for my last 8th edition tournament, and that's pretty much it. I didn't disassemble or paint anything else. Like, still suffering from the debt of fantasy. I don't have. I should try and pick up some other project, I think, soon. So
it's okay, Steve. You take the time you need to mourn.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I'm still mourning. Seriously, I really have a hard time with the game disappearing. And but I did play some games while even though it disappeared. I played at the VTGT hosted by John and his brother in Vermont. And it was great. It was really fun. The venue was awesome on the mountain, on the ski resort, where we listened to the podcast in the winter. And but since it's a ski resort, they didn't have AC. And it was really, really, really hot. And you had some fans, but it was a room full of gamers, so it was hot.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I did give another shot to Age of Sigmar with another friend. We played two games. And so that's a total of four. And for me...
Did you have fun?
No. Both games, even though...
You're doing it wrong.
I know. Well, first game
we played... It's the Apple mentality as applied to Games Workshop.
Yeah, first game we played like straight up pitch battle just to get a feel of the rules and everything. Second game we played the game using the CCBB comp and scenario pack. And well, the first game was a big blob of model fighting in the center of the table. And the second game, it was a big blob of model, but on the left side of the table because of the deployment we use.
Right.
So the blob move along with the deployment.
Yeah, well, that seems to be what that game is, though. Everyone's a big blob of models, like just standing over an objective or standing in the middle of the table.
Yeah.
It degenerates quickly, I find.
So, I still want to go up to 10 games, so let's see. It's getting harder and harder to find players who wants to play. Everybody...
Oh, I'll play you, Steve. Yeah. I'll play my High Elves or something and... You know,
there's
you can
a bunch
pound
of
them.
Players at Labis who they're even starting a league. So you could probably get a game with those guys.
Just remember, Steve, show up with your collection.
Yeah, I'll bring all my 4 or 5 Battle Foam full of Tomb Kings.
Exactly.
I'll just drop everything there.
You're playing it rules as written. It's all good.
Exactly. And also, I tried the rule set for the Ninth Age, which is revised 8th edition from a group on the Warhammer forum. It's former ETC member and also a couple of guys who did the Swedish comp. So they're trying to keep the game alive and revisiting the 8th edition rules and rewriting the magic and stuff like that. So I played a game with Dom and it was good. It was fun to play Warhammer.
Well, it's not even really Warhammer, but it's just they did something different too, right?
Yeah. But the base mechanic are still the same. The biggest rewrite was the magic phase, and they clarified line of sight with the like base, not base size, but model size type, if you want, like monstrous infantry.
Oh, and like a volume type thing, like War Machine?
Yeah, exactly.
It works more like the 7th edition rules for line of sight.
More streamlined and it's not true line of sight, so it was fun. And that's it for my games.
Well, okay then. So I guess that finishes up the hobby and game section. So why don't we take a quick break and then we'll come back and do some upcoming events, some news, and then maybe there's a segment here I don't know if we're going to do this week, but maybe we'll do the hobby tip of the episode. Who knows? Even I don't know. Be right back, geeks. And we're back. So apparently, Antoine has this thing where he puts stuff in the show notes that he may or may not want to do. And I'm apparently supposed to be psychic.
I grayed it out. You put too much pressure on me.
It's so much pressure. The podcast. Yeah. So it's okay, because even though he's grayed it out, we're going to do it anyway, because I came up with a useful tip. It's not that useful, folks. Don't get your hopes up, but it's fairly useful.
You didn't like mine, that's why.
Well, you know, not using sesame seeds to base your minis is hardly a tip, Steve. No one would really think of that. So a lot of us, you know, we're getting models ready for tabletop. We're in a hurry. We use a lot of washes to do shading and to give depth to models. But one of the side effects of doing this is you can get blobs of wash on the model that dry. The wash doesn't flow. It doesn't pool well. So you end up with like dark spots, like water spots almost on the model when the wash dries. Or sometimes you're maybe trying to apply a wash in a specific spot, like in a space between armor plates, and it's not going well, and it's not flowing the way you want. One of the tricks you can do is before you apply your wash, give the model a coat of a gloss or even a satin varnish, and let it dry. And what you'll notice is that when you apply the wash in those crevices, like between armor plates or whatever, that the wash will be wicked in. And it'll literally like jump off your brush and fill the gap between the armor plates. And also it's great to do this when you're doing, if you're doing a wash all over the whole model, you're less likely to get those water spots and those rings because the surface of the model will be smoother. Because when you're applying acrylic paint or any paint really, you're building up layers and it may not be perceivable, but you're building a texture, right? And the wash can get snagged on that texture. And that's why it ends up not flowing the way you want.
Yeah, that's what your primer does.
Yeah, exactly.
Giving more texture so that your paint can adhere.
Yeah,
so
exactly. It has bite to it.
Working against the primer, yeah, in a way.
So you do your gloss varnish, and then you can do your wash. And you let your wash dry good, or dry well, I should say. And if you find some people find that after you've varnished the model, paint doesn't adhere very well. But that's okay, because then after your wash is dry, you can dull coat the model, and that'll give you some texture back for your paint to stick to. And it just makes your model even better protected than it would be if you just coated it once at the end. So you've got layers of varnish protecting the different steps of the model. Another bright side is if you do a gloss varnish before you do your wash, if you need to do a little bit of cleanup, you can grab a Q-tip, a little bit of water, or even maybe some rubbing alcohol or whatever, and you can gently rub the model and clean areas that you don't necessarily want to have wash on.
Yeah, it won't.
And it won't harm the paint you've already put down.
The paint under. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there you have it, folks. That's our hobby tip of the episode. So I'll take us right into our upcoming events.
Okay, the event this time we'll talk about is the 6th edition of Chaos Ludic. Yes, it is coming back. It was in limbo for a while, but we just confirmed that it's back, baby. So October 10th and 11th, 2015, same place as last year. So the Officers' Mess in Long Point, Montreal. We are having a 2-day event of Fantasy Age of Sigmar 40k War Machine and Hordes Infinity and Bolt Action tournaments. All events are held on a single day, so you could attend only one day or switch game between both days. It's $35 per day. That includes a lunch and a small snack during the afternoon. So you can get more information about that at chaosludic.net. And as usual, we will have a link in the show notes.
Awesome.
Oh, something else I want to mention about that quickly. The event is held by the same group as usual. But however, Club Chaos and Norton Defender have merged under a single name. The name of the Norton Defender. Their event has been held for a longer time. The Club Chaos blog is no longer active, and also the Norton Defender groups are hosting an active forum. So we're all doing the same events together anyway, and we were doubling most of the work. So we're all working together now under a single umbrella. So that's it.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. I can go now?
Maybe. Yeah, go. That's fine.
All right. So I discussed this last episode, so I'm just going to go over it again. The Elizabeth Beckley Masterclass. So Elizabeth is coming to Montreal on November 7th and 8th. She's going to be giving a two-day masterclass. Both days are similar but different. So it's going to be a step-by-step painting a model from priming all the way up to finished product. Models are provided. Day one will be a standard model. So think 28mm infantry type model, whatever, different textures, to teach you a bunch of different techniques. And then day two, she's going to be focusing on chibi models. Now, chibi models, because their proportions are different, and because they have usually large surfaces to paint, it's a slightly tuned skill set to paint them. And it's a growing niche market for models. And a lot of people between Super Dungeon Explorer and Impact Miniatures and Arcadia Quest, a lot of people have chibi models they want to paint, but using your standard, 40K painting techniques may not translate really well to that style of mini. So she's going to be teaching us how to paint those. Cost for the classes, we need to get 10 people per day. Cost will be $60 US, plus probably a small fee for space rental. And I'm talking maybe $10 US or so, $10 to $15, let's say, to get the room rented to teach the class in. And these are 8 hours a day, so you're definitely getting your money's worth at $75 US for everything all in, with a model included. It's hard to go wrong. And did I say the dates, Antoine?
Yes, you did. Yes, and you did the right one this time.
Excellent. Yeah, folks, I've been getting that date wrong every time we've talked about the event. Apparently, I thought it was on a Wednesday. I don't know. But it is, in fact, on a Saturday, Sunday. And now I'm rambling. I'll probably just edit this part out. Okay, so news. Man, we got to stop doing these late episodes or late-ish episodes after I've spent an evening wrestling with my baby. Braindead Paul does not make a good host. So let's see. What do we got in the news, guys? My couple picks. Yeah, I'll start. So Mantic this week has released a Ratkin army list, which is in no way related to a Skaven army list. It just seems to be. I think this is one of the last ones they needed to kind of balance out their Kings of War list to fantasy. And they've also announced, I think there's three or four lists left, if I'm not mistaken. And they announced those this week as well, with the release of the Ratkin army list. Mm-hmm.
They announced the name of the book and all the lists that will be in it. The first expansion book for army list only for Kings of War. Yeah.
Basically, it'll include the Chaos army list,
Empire,
yeah. I don't remember what they call it, but it's good aligned human knight based.
And halflings.
Yeah, and halflings, that's right. It's also going to include the Tomb Kings list.
Yes.
And I think there was another. I think there was four lists they talked that were going to be in there.
Four or six, even. I remember some others that I couldn't really link toward the Warhammer Fantasy, but they were mentioned.
And maybe they'll finally give people a list for Nippon and stuff.
Maybe.
People have been asking for that for 10 or 15 years.
They mentioned a list for historical stuff, so maybe some of those are based on the historical instead of the Game Workshop lists.
Or fishmen.
The fishmen. You and the fishmen. Jesus. Anyway, aside from that, Weird Miniatures announced something interesting too. So they're going to be launching a new miniature game called The Other Side. And this is really a set in the Malifaux world, but it takes place on this side of the Breach. There's not a lot of news yet, but it sounds like a very interesting proposition. I'll be curious to see what they're going to do. Because there's some super creative people at Weird. They've got a lot of interesting ideas. I mean, as you can see, it's by looking at Malifaux. And apparently no one on this podcast has a comment about this. So well, on that note, let's go to Antoine.
I never read any Malifaux books, so...
I know, Steve. It's not Warhammer Fantasy. I wasn't
I saw the miniature, and I liked the look of the, like, scary, crazy teddy bear with fang and thing, all the possessed stuff and twisted stuff.
Yeah, well, it's just it. That a lot of,
it looks good.
Interesting, looks really weird good. Stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's okay, yeah. Steve.
But I haven't read the
apparently, rules. I'm not the only tired one. I expected Antoine to jump in with a commentary, because usually he does, right? He's usually got something to say about every miniature game.
Antoine owns every game and has some experience with almost every game around. So, yeah, he should have jumped in.
But still.
Yeah.
I have seen some of the info about that release, but it's a bit unclear what it will be. So, I'm not sure. And the jar is really, really similar. It might be more city-oriented because it's supposed to be held in London proper. But right now, I'm not seeing the difference between Malifaux and that. Because you could already fight in Malifaux using Guild and Neverborn to be policemen and monsters. So I'm not too sure. I haven't looked enough into it to be thrilled about it.
Yeah, they haven't really released a lot.
Yeah,
all we know is that it's a new game set, you know, on this side of the breach, and it's a miniatures game. That's really mm-hmm. all we know. So it's a lot of conjecture at this point.
Yeah.
But I thought it was newsworthy to mention because it's, you know,
absolutely
weird, does some really cool stuff.
But that's why I didn't really comment on it, because I'm not too sure what to say yet.
Wow, that's never stopped you any other time. but that's okay, Antoine. Let's just go into your tour plug of the week.
Well, before I jump in, while we were talking about weird, that might explain also my delay. I've looked at the list of armies for the new book of Kings of War are Uncharted Empires, and it will contain nine new lists, and those will be also include Lizardmen.
Oh yeah, Lizardmen was the other one.
And Beastmen, and two. Unrevealed yet.
Yeah, so it was. It was Lizardmen and Beastmen, I'd forgotten.
Yeah, there is the full list. Most of them are probably like the League of Rordia, no idea what that is. Radkins, which are Skaven. Brotherhood, which I think are the Chaos guy. League of Rordia might be the Empire. The Empire of Dust, which are probably Tomkings.
Yep.
Reptilians, which are Lizardmen, the Erd, I think, are the Beastmen.
Yep,
and there's
right.
a last one, which is called the Varangur, which I had no idea what they are.
Maybe the Ogres?
Maybe. But they already have an Ogre list, so I don't think it will be that.
It's the Fishmen.
It could be the Fishmen.
Never underestimate the Fishmen.
Yeah. So... that's what I was looking for. So on my news picks, the first one, Thor Gaming has previewed, and I think it's on pre-order now, or it will be soon, a new model for the Riddent, the new Gremlin / Goblin Knight faction, the Tower Dragon. We already mentioned that an handful of episodes ago, I think, when they released the sketch for it. It was three kind of giant chocobo-like creature with howdahs and riddens riding them. But now they have the first sculpt for those three. And it's a goblin riding in a howdah on a giant / dragon / chicken. And he has semaphore flags.
I was going to say, those look like semaphore flags. Is that actually what they are?
Yeah, I think so.
What is he trying to help land?
Probably not land, but it might be used as a signaller for the army, like to transmit a message from your baron.
Yeah, makes sense.
And the model look cool. All the ridden stuff looks really cool, so that one is nothing new there.
That's going to be the only faction we see on the table, you realize.
Well, when they're more available, yeah, I think everybody will.
Ridden and the puppets. That seems to be the two factions that everyone loves. The Britannes.
After that, Industria Mechanica are releasing what they call their Zero Mech. Industria Mechanica are releasing all kind of strange, bigger scale stuff. Like, I think their official scale is 135. And strange model, like floating ships, like flying ships. This one is what you would call like Macross mech. What are their name?
The Gerwalks? They're talking about the Veritex?
Yeah, the Veritex. But in World War One style.
Or World War Two.
Or World War Two, maybe.
Yeah, it's not a biplane. It's a World War Two.
Yes. World War Two, but with a mecha anime style.
And in like a hybrid mode, like the Veritex are, like the what they call the Gerwalk mode.
The wings anime. Becomes arms and fingers. And
yeah, and the landing gear become legs underneath it.
Yeah, and it looks really cool.
That is...
Other of the models have been previewed before, and they make great centerpiece, or not centerpiece, because I don't see any game playing with those, but they would make cool display piece.
It'd be cool if it uses it for dust.
Maybe.
Sadly, it's much cooler looking than any dust model.
Yes, if dust had a faction like that, I might play that game.
Yeah, exactly. Not that dust is bad. I'm not trying to say I love playing dust. I've only played it a couple times. I really like the rules.
Yeah,
I need to play some more with Yom.
Yeah, from what I've heard, the rules are really cool, but I just cannot get into the fluff / visual side of it. So that would probably get me in if they had that officially.
Yeah.
And lastly, I want to mention that Mercs have started to preview stuff for their 2.0 rules. So Mercs by Mechacon Game. Right now, you can download the quick start rules, which PDF, which is not really a quick start, but it's a what changed. It's a document that lists what changed between the first version and the upcoming second version.
Yeah, it's like a changelog.
Yeah, a changelog. And you can use that to try out the game with the beta 1.9 cards that you can buy right now on their site. So I'm not a fan of that decision to sell the extra cards they have from their playtest to players who want to try the game before it goes out. I think putting
it's weird
in a downloadable format instead and not calling them finals might have been a better idea, so people could get their interest. Now, I won't pay $10 for a pack of cards that I know is not final.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't see the interest, especially as that game, most people had multiple factions, so it takes $10 per faction deck to order, which I don't really like. However, yeah. the changelog, the change we've gone over with Paul last night, and they do look good. The change are interesting. So
very much so.
It's worth taking a look if you played Mercs, and I've kept your minis but are not playing it anymore because the game bugged down. Well, not bugged down, but it was a bit too simple, and there were some quirky stuff that didn't work, like melee or...
Yeah, melee.
Suppression was too strong and stuff like that.
The fact there was no scenarios or anything, so playing the game got really boring.
Yeah. So that changelog looks like it will be the 2.0 version might be a great release when it comes out.
We will definitely have to try it since we have the models and stuff.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to it. It gives me some hope because I really think that the Mercs Minis crew did a great job designing the factions, and they have a really rich backstory to the game, and it's well written and it's totally plausible. Like the way the world kind of capitalism kind of breaks the world. But it was just unfortunate the rule set, while interesting because it was different, I think it was a little too different, and it just had a lot of odd interactions and it just didn't have the polish that a final rule set should have.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really hoping that when they do re-release the rules, that they can keep that price point they had for the rule book, because they had a gorgeous hardcover rule book, but it was only $30.
Yes. It was cheap, but that's, 4 years, 5 years ago? It will probably go up a bit, but still.
Oh, yeah, but You know, as long as it's not a $100 rulebook, we're still doing better than GW.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not too hard. So I know they, looking quickly through their forum, some of the 1.9 stats have been mentioned there. They don't allow a scan of the cards, but the listing of the stats are available for some models. So we might be able to maybe take a look at the game while waiting for the 2.0. Maybe try a quick one or something like that if we find enough profiles.
It's just strange that they, you know, they have a download for the version 1.1 of the cards, like for the old edition of the rules, like before.
The download for the 2.0 might be coming out, might be coming in the near future. We don't know. They haven't announced anything. They haven't denied that it will come, but they haven't confirmed either. So they are sending those right now, and they went on sale like yesterday. So maybe some more info have been put out since I've checked last night, but who knows?
Yeah. We'll have to wait and see.
Yep.
But definitely a step in the right direction.
Absolutely.
For Mercs Minis.
And that's it for my news picks. So, all right. Steve?
And for my part, I received my TH Miniature Kickstarter, and it was on time. So that's the first Kickstarter I pledge or participate along with other people that was on time. And the quality is quite good. There's no bubble in the casting, and everything was great. I even received...
For people who don't know...
Yeah, I was going to say...
Sorry.
Thierry's Harminiature, I've... launched a Risen Fantasy Terrain line.
Yeah, and some nice stuff. That a few buildings, like a
it was
bunch
mostly
of accessories,
yes.
Walls, and
yeah,
scatter
stuff
and stuff like that.
Yeah, scatter terrain. They had like a it almost looked like a tower or maybe an altar.
It was a pit, yeah, kind of a
with
pit.
Like a pit underneath.
Yeah,
that was the Kickstarter exclusive model.
Oh, was it really?
Yes.
So anybody who didn't pledge for it during the Kickstarter won't be able to get that specific model. All the rest will be, but not that piece.
Well, that's too bad. It was a nice piece.
Yeah, so now it's sitting... actually, today it was sitting in a tub with soap to remove the...
mold release?
Yeah, the mold release.
Yeah, that Kickstarter, I just want to point out, it was a small startup company.
Yep.
Right? So using Kickstarter for what it was intended for. Crazy. And it delivered on time.
Yeah, they broke the model.
Yeah, that's you know, they obviously don't know how to use Kickstarter.
Of course they don't.
Saying. They need to talk to Cool Mini or not.
Yeah. And learn how to postpone and postpone and postpone and give excuses to postpone more.
Exactly.
Well, you could talk about the, what was it? Well, creature caster. It's still haven't received anything. And it's more than a year ago. And Kingdom Death, I think some people are really crying because I don't think anybody...
They have announced the shipping has started or is starting in the next few weeks.
Okay. So that's 2 years after. So that's not too bad.
But he did have good communication with people, at least.
Yeah.
And he was a startup, like, and I think he offered people refunds if they didn't want to wait. So I think he was pretty straight up about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have too much of a problem with Kingdom Death.
And another news I have is that there was the ETC tournament last weekend, and for the first time there was Team Canada at the Warhammer Fantasy event, and it was Canhammer Chris Hayne, who was the team captain, and they didn't place that well, but they won and they received the best opponent, favorite opponent for the weekend. So congratulations to them. So
that's a good title to win.
Yes. And also at ETC, Mantic were giving a rulebook of Kings of War, second edition, to every fantasy player at ETC.
That's a good move on their part.
Yeah, that's clever. Ronnie is not a dumb guy, right?
No.
So kudos to him.
And
sorry, Steve, didn't Team Canada also win Best Painted at the event?
Yeah, that's what I think, but I only saw the picture for the favorite opponent banner they received, but I didn't see the Best Painted.
Oh, so it's unconfirmed.
Yeah, but I think it is confirmed. That's what they tweeted
Chris
about.
Chris announced it on Twitter. Yeah.
So. Oh, well, then I guess it's
so
confirmed.
So it must be official. But they only had the banner for your favorite opponent.
I didn't see him announce that. I must have missed it.
And also in the news, there's Super Dungeon Explorer. They are going to release a computer game based on their popular board game. And it was, if you went to Gen Con, there was a super cool USB, mini USB drive with the alpha version of the game on it.
Oh, I think I saw that. Wasn't the USB key was a mimic or something?
Yeah,
yeah, it's
exactly.
The mimic from the game, the Boo Boo T, they call them.
Yeah, it's
basically
a treasure chest with teeth and like a tongue.
Yeah, during Kickstarter, during Gen Con, you could even order that from their website. It might still be up, I'm not sure. But it's worth a try if you're interested.
Nice.
And that's it for news.
Yeah, I'd be interested to try a Super Dungeon style tactics game. I wonder if it's really going to be... Is it a tactics game? Does anyone know? Or is it actually like just Super Dungeon Explorer, but in a
video
game form?
It's a tactics game.
Okay, so
it's
really
not Super Dungeon Explorer in a computer mode. It's a
really
a
Final Fantasy tactics style.
Yeah.
Okay.
Turn-based tactics style based on Super Dungeon Explorer.
Oh, nice. Well, I'll have to keep an eye on that. All right, so that finishes up our news section. Now, you know what? We haven't been going on that long, so do you want to just go right into the main topic? Or do we want to take another pause, Antoine? I'd leave it up to you.
I would take a pause just so I can run to the bathroom and come back.
And refill.
Well, all right. I guess we'll let Antoine go to the washroom then. So we'll be right back, geeks. And we're back. Okay, folks. So here it is, the main topic, our gaming tables. So everyone has a story about, you know, their first gaming table. And everyone probably did it a little bit differently. You know, off the air, Antoine and I were just discussing it with Steve as well. You know, how my first gaming table was very different than theirs. So Antoine, I think you've actually mentioned on the show before how when you started gaming... You started playing right on your living room floor.
Yes.
Right? You're playing.
In my case, it's not a gaming table. It was a gaming surface.
Yeah, well, exactly, right? So
we were playing on straight on the floors.
Floor hammer.
Playing on the short carpet or in the linoleum tiles or anything that was available, but that was big enough to have a game because most of our kitchen table were not 4x6. And I must be honest, when we started playing, we didn't bother with the 4x6. We were playing with the whole room, 4 or 5 player at a time. And if it took 4 turns to get to the other guy, it took 4 turns to get the other guy. But there was no max number of turns or anything. So were playing more like the Age of Sigmar mentality.
Yeah, it's the joys of youth, right? You have infinite time, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
And well, Steve actually did kind of the same thing when he was saying, but he took it up a notch because...
Yeah, we were a bit more evolved because we did measure and put tape on the floor to separate the 6x4, and we removed the tape every time we finished playing in the basement of my friend's place.
Now, that's pretty ingenious. As a kid, I don't think I ever would have thought of that, putting down like the masking tape or whatever to mark out the size of the table.
We did that later, but not when we started.
At first, we were using cord and like extension cord we use at first, because we use what we found lying around, and then we upgraded to the tape.
Okay, see, I started later on, right? I was in my 20s when I started miniature wargaming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not when I started collecting, but when I actually started playing. And so we just went to the hardware store and bought a 4x8 sheet of
plywood, probably.
No, it wasn't plywood. It's the
chipboard.
The chipboard. Yeah, I can't remember what the actual term for it is.
Masonite.
No, the stuff made of like the chips of wood. It's not masonite either. It doesn't matter.
It's press wood, no?
Yeah, it's a press wood. It's made from wood scraps. Anyway. And yeah, we cut it in half, and so we had 2 4x4 sections. We just spray painted them green, and that was our first gaming table.
Yeah, I was in my early teens when we started playing, so that was something too advanced for us. We didn't have access to a car, and I don't think our parents wanted us to own 4x8s that would take up space in the game.
Exactly, right?
Yeah, exactly, because they were always thinking it's a phase, it's going to pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my father probably thought that right to the day he passed. All to say, there is really no wrong way to make a gaming table. Certainly, there are some designs that are more practical and more flexible than others. Then we're just going to kind of discuss what, I guess, some of the standard building techniques. And we're not really going to go into, we can briefly go over, I suppose, the whole idea of building, you know, an actual table. Like, not just the gaming surface, but the whole kit and caboodle, right? Because some people go to that extent as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Antoine, how do you think we should start this?
I think we should just go over the different types of playing surface people go through. We already mentioned a floor or a regular plywood painted, but other surface people do play on. And it's also kind of an evolution, depending on when you start. You don't have enough money, you don't have the space, and as you go and invest more into it, you can have more and more costier option.
Of course.
Or fancier option, depending on which way you go.
And you know, it's funny, because sometimes you can have a nice looking option that doesn't have to cost you a lot of money.
No.
It may take you some time. Yeah. Because you've always got to put in something. Either you're going to spend a lot of money and get something fast that you can make look good, or you're going to spend almost no money, do it really quickly. You'll have a surface, but it won't look very good. Or you can not spend a lot of money, put a lot of time, and have something that looks good. So it's really like a lot of variety there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so aside from like the painted plywood or MDF that we talked about, there's foam board. I think most people do gaming tables nowadays, at least, out of insulation foam board, because it's lightweight and relatively sturdy.
That or a light masonite.
Yeah.
That's the two we often see.
Yeah. And it's... Well, the advantage of foam board is it doesn't warp.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is more...
But obviously, it can. I've seen ample foam boards warped because of storage.
Yeah, because of where they're stacked.
Too much glue, maybe.
Because they'll pull the board. If the board's thin enough...
They can
when warp, the glue shrinks. Yeah. If you put a ton of glue on one side, when the glue dries and shrinks, it'll curl the board.
It's not as bad as wood. Pure wood.
Yeah, but if you're using like a 2-inch foam board, it's unlikely you're going to get a curl on it from more likely from the way it's stacked. Like I see a lot of people, they stack them with stuff, nothing supporting the middle,
mm-hmm.
with like spacers on the outside
as
edges.
Or they're stacked on
the
lean on a wall with an angle. And
to make matters worse, those the ones at the store actually have masonite glued to the bottom. So the masonite's warped and they're leaned. So it's like...
So it doesn't help at all.
The double whammy, yeah. So yeah, foam board.
Yeah, another thing that is often
suggested
in books is a simple kitchen table with a cloth on either green or sable for sand. For starting players who want something better than just their wooden kitchen table, you have at least that option, and it's pretty cheap.
That's true.
You can get like a bed sheet if it's in the right color, or some felt.
No, not felt.
Well, felt, the problem with felt is you get the little bits of lint and stuff, and it's hard to clean.
Yeah, but it's also bad if you're playing like fantasy because you want to slide the models. But for
fantasy games, is dead, so you're safe.
Yeah, but other games do use blocks and ranks, Steve.
but seriously, the felt it won't last as long as the fabric.
It looks better though.
Because it has a bit of texture, but still, the felt will absorb a bit more of the dice sound. So if you're in an apartment and with your girlfriend watching TV on the other room or something like that, it's going to absorb a bit more of the sound. But still, from what I saw, the felt, there's lots of lint coming out and everything. And like if you eat a snack or anything, like
chips will stick
into it. And
yeah, if you have cats. Cat fur is like the bane of felt.
And it doesn't wash as well as cloth.
No, absolutely. I mean, raw felt is hard to wash because it'll come apart at the edges. Because felt, I think felt is just made from compressed fibers. So there's nothing really holding it together. It's not woven like other stuff is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At least something else we see is, in that case, it's more for a smaller table. It's the paper mats. Infinity Entry Star does come with one. Or the Drop Zone Commander come with small flimsy cardboard tiles.
Yep, that's right. It comes with a very thin cardboard cardstock tiles.
Or a poster, I think. I'm not too sure.
It depends. So yeah. I think the starter box, the two-player starter, I think may have a poster.
Mm-hmm.
But if you buy the Cityscape or Ruinscape terrain sets, it's tiles. I think they're 12 by 12 tiles that are double-sided.
So you have those. That's the first kind of mats you can get. But after that, there are other types of mats you can get. The first type is the latex mat. I only know of Zuzzy doing them. They're like texture latex that you can paint, that you need a big surface to lay on it. So you probably need at least a plywood or something, or some masonite, plain masonite, to put under the mat. But they are nice.
They are gorgeous.
And you have the texture of the surface, so it's really, really lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the biggest problem with Zuzzy being the delivery time.
Oh, yeah.
I know what the website says, but really expect to wait a year for your stuff, because
it's that worse now.
It depends on the size of your order.
Yeah,
and if it's something he has in stock, you might be lucky. But most of the time, it's not. Like the last order we did took a bit more than a year.
No, a bit under a year. It was
a bit under.
It was. I think I ordered in October, and I got it in July.
Wow.
No, we got it like 2 weeks before the next guest leading.
No, maybe I picked it up in July or August, because I remember I picked it up on my way to the States on a family vacation to go to Lake George. So that would have had to have been summer. So end of July, August, maybe. But
maybe. I thought it was longer than that. But still, 10 months it was already bad.
Because, you know, we're going on a vacation, right, for like a week. So we had the car packed full of stuff. And then I get to the freight forwarder and I pick up my boxes, because we have a ship to the States, because shipping into Canada is quite expensive. And he shipped them in these giant poster boxes.
Individual ones.
And he taped them. Yeah, each mat had its own box. And I think I had 8 or 10 mats on order.
Wow.
And he taped the boxes together in bricks of 4. So it was these giant, like, 6-foot-long boxes that just didn't fit in the car. Like, it was a nightmare to try to get them to fit. So I'm, like, in the parking lot cutting all these boxes down. And you can't leave boxes at the freight forwarder.
Oh, no.
Because they'll charge you if you leave the cardboard there. So, stuffing the cardboard into the car on top of the person riding in the back seat, you know, until we get to Plattsburgh, which is, like, 30 minutes away. So I could put it like the garbage cans in the parking lot outside the mall. It was hilarious.
I didn't know that part.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was quite the adventure. Meanwhile, my wife is sitting there going, what the hell did you buy? What are you doing? Why are all these huge boxes here? How are you going to make this fit? Why are we taking this on vacation with us? Yeah, it was good times. Thank God she's understanding.
Yeah, at least. Okay. Another type of might you see is, we already mentioned cloth. Some company do nice background printed cloth. So you could get a 4x6 of a good thick fabric with the either a cityscapes or a water front printed on it. They are not the best to use, but they can, and they're usually pretty cheap compared to other options.
Yeah, I have one. I mean, wow, that sentence started horribly. It went nowhere. So I have one from Sable Designs, who make the Sable gaming bags, actually. And they don't make them anymore, but I have a desert one like that. It's a 6x4, and it's got like a rubber back, and it's the material is almost like a felt-like material,
mm-hmm,
with a print on it of, you know, oranges, yellows. It looks kind of like desert sand. And because it's on the rubber back, it's quite heavy, and it doesn't slide around on the table. So you can get some really good quality product in you know, printed gaming mats now.
Yeah, and another printed mats you can get, but it's a different material, is you can get some mats on a mouse pad like material. Frontline Gaming fat mats are one example of that.
Yep.
Those are the high end of the mat side of the gaming surface.
Yeah, they're gorgeous, but you're talking like $100 for a 6x4.
Yeah, something like that. It's really expensive.
And they are, it's good because it's good and bad, but they are really, really slick. So you won't have problem moving stuff on it, but they also lack a certain 3D effect that you can find in maybe the Zazimat or a custom board.
Yeah, but they come already painted with their...
Oh, yeah, they have nice printed artwork on them.
Yeah, but... and you have your carrying pouch too. So it's easy for storage if your storage is a problem. So you can just hide your 6x4 or whatever the size you're playing, and you just hide it behind or under the bed or something like that, and then you can easily store your mat all rolled up into a carrying case and sleeve.
So yeah, most of the mats, you can do that. At least the Frontline Gaming come with the carry bag for
it.
So it's one of the advantage of that type of surface, because it's easy to hide.
Yeah, and I think also it's if you drop some water on it, it's easy to wash too.
Yes.
Water, yeah, because of the finish, it's
yeah, wet down. Or yeah, beer, or
yeah, contrary to a cloth or a felt, or
which will.
Cloth, it's okay if you drop water or something, because it's cheap and you can just replace it and turn it around or something like that.
Well, I think we're talking more like the printed cloth stuff.
The printed one.
Yeah, okay. Oh, sorry.
So, and after that, after the mats, you're getting to the higher standard, the plastic tiles. So, molded plastic tiles. There, I think, like the Game Workshop Realms of Battle board. The Secret Weapon miniature, I don't remember their
Tablescapes.
Name. Tablescape, or the Games and Gear tile that, Paul, you have one on from the Kickstarter coming sometime.
Sometime, hopefully before I die. Yeah.
So those are cool products. If you don't mind having the grid.
Yeah, because of course...
Yeah.
It's less of an issue with most games now, since most games do pre-measuring.
Mm-hmm.
I think the 2x2 tiles are less of an issue than the 1x1 like secret weapon tiles for that.
Yeah,
because 1x1 makes it very easy to guess distances. A 2x2, you can still be kind of ambiguous.
Well, it's still easy. I mean, after a couple of games, you're gonna figure it out. And
well, yeah, but let's be honest, it's not hard for us to guess any distance in any game now, right? Because we play, so it matters less.
But they have the advantage that they will be, they are hard plastic, so they will be tough. They also, most of them also have great details on them.
Absolutely. I mean, if you've ever seen the, I don't know if I've ever shown you the Games Workshop Realm of Battle, like the city one for 40K.
I've seen them at TempleCon. We played on them once. So I haven't seen the one you got, but they're the same.
Yeah.
Aren't they? And the team game we played at TempleCon 2 years ago.
No, that was the Forge World one. That one has less details than the actual Realm of Battle one.
Oh, true? Oh, I didn't really know that.
Yeah. So the Forge World one is actually, I prefer it because it's less crazy over-the-top detailed. The Games Workshop Realm of Battle Cityscape one is...
I remember seeing them and
the preview.
They're just no flat surface anywhere.
Exactly. We saw it at Gen Con. They had a couple tiles at Gen Con.
Oh, yeah, that's where I saw them. Okay,
we were looking at them there, yeah. So there's just no flat surface anywhere. It's textured everywhere. It's kind of over the top.
Yeah. But after that, you have the nice in-between, like the Game Workshop, the Realms of Battle, the fantasy one.
Yeah.
It is fine. There's too much skulls and no, you don't know why, but there's like skulls pit everywhere or cracks in the land with skulls in it.
I don't know if you noticed, there's some new Age of Sigmar tiles that have been leaked. We've seen pictures a few times.
Yeah.
No skull pits.
Oh, well, that we can see.
But it's covered.
They've gone a bit away from the skull fetish with the new Age of Sigmar stuff.
I think we need to wait because nowadays it's Korn stuff coming out, so I'm guessing we're going to see some scenery with skulls everywhere.
Well, I think for Korn it fits. But
the skulls went away with Slaanesh. So no boobies and no skulls.
It's probably. So to get back on the gaming surface, one of the advantage I find with the hard plastic, is since it's tile, you can rearrange the table every game you play.
Yeah, which is not the case of the mat. If you don't get two smaller size mat that you can swap, and even then you have two options instead of secret weapon miniature ones are one by one, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
You have so many different variations you can do.
And they mix well together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And especially you have the, like, one is more of a plain or a field with a river, so you can arrange the river how it suits you every game. So that's nice for that.
Mm-hmm. And you can do the same with the city one with the roads.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they're well designed.
And they even did a normal one and a damage one that you can mix and match together. So you could have part of your city damage and the other one not.
So you can do even a scenario of a bombardment or something like that.
And at the bombardment centered on one part of the map only. So using the damage shot on that section and not on the rest.
See, so, Paul, even your board, it's all about forging the narrative.
That's right. My boards always forge narrative, Steve. Have you seen my room full of terrain?
I saw that the room full of boxes...
That's the one.
The boxes are full of terrain. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And lastly, the other type of surface you might see are custom boards. So those are like a step up from the foam board someone could do. So you can have a raised area or terrain that are part of the surface itself that are permanently attached to it, or just... crazy textures or like river already on them. So those can go to crazy high standards. If you look at it's a Battleboard UK who do crazy custom boards. I'll try to add a link to them, but they have like a full Italian city during World War II boards. So that's two by fours that you can attach together with a river and building already fixed on it. Then you can go crazy to a smaller, simple ones like the foam boards I have. Some of the one I did for my own tables have river in them. So I have three 2x4s, and two of those sections have rivers in them that you can mix and match to have a bit like you have the segmented smaller boards, but less options. So,
right.
And those were done by hand. So they were done 10, 15 years ago. So they don't have the detail I could be able to add now, or that you could find in the plastic tiles, the commercial products. But still, people can do crazy table like that with team or...
Well, like when you go to TempleCon, there's a the year I went, there was a one with was a down a mine shaft or something like that.
Yeah, the exactly. thematic scenario.
Table, yeah, exactly. So everything machine. Is yeah. built in the table. So
well, also yeah. what it has to do is look at pictures of Warhammer World, right? Their new
yeah.
displays and stuff from the reopening this year.
Yeah, also the crazy stuff.
Absolutely. So that's another. High end of the scale for gaming surface. And that, I think, probably there, rounds up the
there's types. Another really high end gaming surface, but it's not a gaming surface per se. It's the Sultan gaming table.
I think we can talk about table. Well, we can jump on it now. Tables. What tables do you use? Not the gaming surface itself, but the table it sits on.
Yeah, the structure it sits okay. on.
Yeah. So we already mentioned floors,
yeah,
which is the easiest one.
A lot of people just sit at the gaming surface on top of their existing kitchen table, right?
Yeah,
exactly. And if you do that, put the masonite or anything, remember to put a tablecloth underneath so you won't scratch the surface.
And it will slide less also.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, I actually use two plastic folding tables mm-hmm. put together.
The, yeah, exactly.
3x6s or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, you some of the I think the standard size for those are 6x3, if I'm not mistaken, and you can get those foldable at Canadian Tire on sales from time to time.
Yeah, they're about $50 a table.
Yeah,
and Steve, I just want to point out that I said it was 3x6, and you turned around and said it was 6x3.
Oh,
it's,
sorry,
it's the same number, Steve.
No, it's not the same.
But aren't they 30 inches and not 3 feet?
Yeah, they're exactly. They're a little bit less than 3 feet. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're correct.
Well, you can get
six
some
by at, 2.5.
They're 2.5 feet.
And there's some at Costco as well that are quite sturdy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're completely foldable. And
they're easy to store.
And yeah,
they
the
hide
six...
everywhere all over the house. I got some behind my couch. I have some behind my TV in the living room. No one even knows they're there.
Yeah, another option you have, like the tables I have here are plywood with foldable legs screwed on them.
Yep, or you can even get a sawhorse, right, or two sawhorses.
Yes, also.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then you need to carry the sawhorse
top. Of, I'm just
while
giving options.
For mine, they are crazy... heavy and hard to transport because it's a full 4x6 and 4x8 I have. So the going back, I probably would change to the foldable plastic tables. But when I built those, they weren't available. So the big tables I have now are used for working on hobby stuff. And one is used for the terrain and the playing surface. After that, you can build the same type of custom table I built, but people do build some with nice raised area on the side to be able to slide the foam or the surface in and varnish them and have nice finish on them. You see that sometime in store or with... shelving options under it to store terrain or bags. So I know Portail du Jeu did something like that when the store was open. And you often see example on the web and people share their plans. I know the Rob Hawkins, who do the terrain and the custom terrain blog, he did share his plans for the one he did for himself.
Oh, nice.
I'm wondering if, because I have found some plans, and I actually sent them to our buddy Dan.
Yep, you sent that link to me also. So yes, they look cool. That was a nice high-end one with the shelve and.
And it wasn't an insurmountable project for most people.
Absolutely.
So maybe we should post a link to that in the show notes just to give people an idea what we're talking about.
Because mm-hmm. It would be interesting to see it.
Yeah, it was a 4x6 made out of some basic, wood supplies you can get from any hardware store. And it had a
2x4 framing under it.
Yeah, 2x4 framing with 4x4 legs, and it had a trim around the outside.
Mm-hmm.
That would give you
a nicer wood.
Exactly. That would basically give you a quarter inch lip around your foam boards that you sat in. So you'd make your foam sectional table, you'd sit it in the frame, and it gave you a quarter inch lip around so that your dice wouldn't roll off the table.
Yeah, and it gives a nice finish that you don't have on the plastic table or the regular plywood ones.
Yeah, exactly. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, and after that, if you go higher, you can have the option that Steve mentioned.
The Sultan tables, yeah.
The Sultan tables or other table by, what's the name of the company?
For the Sultan tables?
Yeah.
I should know this.
Geek Chic.
Geek Chic, thank you. I was about to Google it.
The Sultan table is their highest model one, but they have some lowest option. And I know at Gen Con this year, the other companies were starting to sell competing products cheaper rates than Geek Chic's.
Yeah, well, I mean, Geek Chic, it's gorgeous, but I think the entry level table is
like $2,000 or
something like that. It's crazy.
Like their coffee tables are $500.
Yeah, but I mean they are all handmade, so I get it.
Yeah, and they have option for that probably most wargamer won't use, but they're built more for the board game / RPG gamers. They have custom trays on all sides with sliding containers and
everything. So. That's the Sultan, right? The Sultan starts at $14,750 US.
Yeah, each player gets its own felt dice tray inside the drawers, and yeah, it's really, really awesome.
Yeah, I think the entry-level gaming table they have is the Portal, and it basically has a surface that comes up. It's a bunch of interlocking boards that make the table surface, so you can lift those up and put your gaming stuff inside.
Yeah, the point of the table is to use it as a dining table, but you hide your gaming underneath or inside the table.
And that's $2,000 starting. So, well, the hoplite's also like that. I think that's coffee table sized. In any case, yeah, it's an expensive
proposition. And it's in the US, so imagine the shipping costs.
I know, you don't ship that here. That would be crazy.
That. Can you imagine?
I think it would be cheaper to find a woodworker and do it for you.
Yeah, I think so.
Even high-end one, then pay for the shipping and the customs. Do you imagine? Can you imagine the customs on the item
like so that? You have to guarantee the shipment, right?
Yeah.
So if you're buying and the Sultan ranges up to $20,000. So if you're buying a $20,000 gaming table, yeah, that's going to get expensive to insure. Like, oh yeah, your table was damaged in transit. No!
No!
We will never be that rich geek, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter.
Anyway, back on topic. So yeah, those are different types of boards. Now, do you want to talk maybe about how we would recommend building a table for a first-time gamer?
Yeah, we can. We could finish with that, I think.
Okay, so what else should we discuss then?
Well, the next item we had, we already glossed over. Like what are the advantage of segmented boards? Like the tiles versus a full-size fixed table or the mats, let's say.
I'll be honest, I saw that in the notes, but I thought it was three separate lines.
Oh,
and I didn't. My brain was not formatting that properly. Yeah.
So when it's in black, and it's separate lines, you skip over it. But when it's in gray, You don't think to skip over it and you just use it, right?
Listen, Antoine has a history the last couple episodes with topics that weren't supposed to be there. They left in the notes. So I never know anymore.
I think the notes should only be color-coded. Once.
I'm pretty sure it happened twice, Antoine.
No, the other time, we were not talking about the same thing in the notes, but it was there.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Right, so segmented board versus full table.
Yeah, we already mentioned that the segmented boards give you more layout options. And that's true.
And storage options. And I think that's probably even more important nowadays to most adult gamers than the layout options. Because ultimately, we all have lives outside of the games, and we have to be able to put this stuff somewhere.
Yeah.
And another thing worth mentioning, it's the versatility. Since, like, if you use a Tablescape or GW table, not to mention those, but, like, if you're playing Warhammer Fantasy or 40K, you use 6x4. But then if you want to use for War Machine, you just use a 4x4 and you just use the section you need. You don't need another separate board to play another game.
No, that's a very good point.
So it saves space and you get more for your money. So even though it's more expensive than building your own like foam or another surface, but you can get lots of option and you get more for your money.
Even the fat mat, which is probably the highest cost for a fixed size mat, is cheaper than most of the tiling options. But the tiling options offer you more opportunities and are easier to store.
Yeah.
However, like we mentioned also, there is the grid, depending on the game you play. Let's say if you play War Machines, the 1x1 tiles will give an advantage to anybody who can easily use those to guess range, because there is no pre-measurement in that game.
Yeah, that's one of the few major games that doesn't have pre-measuring yet.
Yeah. Well,
It kind of has pre-measuring, right? Because everyone can measure their control range at any time.
Yeah, you have pre-measurement from your main character, but not from the whole army. So that it won't kill the game. It won't completely not work, because also both opponents will be able to do it. So it both might have a better, more clearing charge and less out of range actions.
Yeah.
So it might speed up the game.
I don't know, because you might lend out more just outside the movement of your urban, which you could have moved into or something like that. So no, because you have more guess to, if you had the pre-measurement, you would know for sure you are in it or out of it and you could just move it. But having to guess, I think would be longer if the 1x1 grid is there. Also, it can detract a bit visually to have the separation between the tile.
Absolutely. If they're not put together snug.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some tricks to that. So not the GW tile is probably the biggest culprit of this, because its clips are not very good, so the tiles can shift and stuff, and they're not necessarily firmly attached to each other. The Tablescape stuff, because of the locking system they use, which was a carryover from the old Exilis tiles, the tiles are very, very firmly butted up against each other. So there's not really a lot of edging showing. And the trick is that when you paint your tiles, roll your paint over onto the edges. Right? Don't leave... Like, some people I've seen paint the edge tiles black. That is, like, the worst thing you can possibly do. Because when those tiles butt up against each other, you'll create, like, a black grid.
Mm-hmm.
You really want to try to carry the main colors over onto the sides, so that when they're up against each other, it'll help hide those seams.
Yeah. Outside of that, do you see any other plus or disadvantage to the tiles?
No. Not really. It's just that little bit of a visual deterrent. But aside from that, I think the smaller segmented tiles are just the way to do it. It's just so much more practical.
The full-size table also could give a stronger narrative, but you are also set on it and it won't change.
So yeah, I think the full-size
tables might get bored.
The full-size tables are better suited for scenic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're going to do a table that's basically the Normandy landing or something, you know, build that as one big table and you make it a fixed piece because it just makes the most sense.
Yep. I think that covers the segmented versus full-size. So next thing we can talk about before moving to the how-to is terrain feature built-in versus movable terrain. So the terrain itself is not the is not part of the gaming surface outside of the custom boards. So we're mostly talking about the, that part of the gaming surface world. But when you're doing a custom board, you can either create a bunch of terrain that's fixed on it or leave space where you can put movable or removable terrain pieces that you can change the layout from. And both options are good. However, the fixed terrain don't let you play with the layout. However, yeah, exactly. It might look better.
Yeah. Yes. And again, I think it goes back to what I was saying about scenic tables. Yeah. If you're building a thematic scenic table, building in the terrain features will really bring that out.
Yeah.
Whereas modular terrain is great, but you know, again, it's going to be sitting on a base. You're going to see the base on the table. It's not going to be a smooth, right?
Mm-hmm.
It won't be as immersive.
Another advantage of the movable terrain is it's easier to store. A big custom table with the terrain built in probably won't be able to be stored outside of just letting it sit on the table.
Yeah, it can't just slide it under the bed, eh?
No. Yeah, depending on the height of the terrain you have on it, it might be impossible to store anywhere except on a permanent table.
Yeah, it's very true.
So, I think there's a good in between. Having the river built in on a custom board is fine because it doesn't really add any height.
Yeah, the problem is when you start getting the huge topographical features and you're adding lots of height to the table.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it gets hard.
Exactly. I mean, the one table I'm thinking of there where they did a good job of it was they made it so that when the table came apart in the middle, and then you could put, it's almost like how GW did their tiles. So you put the hills that were on one side of the table near the, you know, up, line it up against the flat side. Oh, well, how do you explain this? Basically, the table was like a valley, right? Mm-hmm. So you'd fold the table in half and turn one half 180 degrees to the other.
Yeah.
So that they stacked well that way.
Like a Tetris puzzle.
Yeah, but they took a lot of room.
Yes. Yeah, so that's a good thing to think about when you build a table like that.
Yeah.
Do you want to be able to move it and store it? Or just to carry it, like some custom tables are still made in sections, like in the 2x4s. Like let's say a War Machine custom table could be done in 2x4s, or you could do a full 4x4. But a 4x4 doesn't fit in every car you might come upon. So exactly. If you want to move that, it might be a pain. You might need to have a bigger minivan or a trailer or something like that.
Yeah. And you really got to consider the materials that you're going to use to build your table.
Yeah, because of the weight.
Yeah, like I built a 40K city table, out of MDF. Now, it's on a scale of 1 to 10 for looks. Once it's finished being painted up, I'd probably give it like a 7 or 7.5. It looks really good. It's got a nice texture to it. I did a little bit of work on it to give it some depth, but it's made out of 3/4 inch MDF.
Yeah.
And it's cut into 2x2 tiles, but you carry 2 or 3 of those tiles and it starts getting heavy. You know, and try to transport. I remember I put it in my car to take those tiles down to my parents' house an hour away from here, because I was detailing them using a table saw my dad's table saw. So when I put them in the trunk of the car, Like, I literally, like, looking at my car, I could see the whole back end of the car sagging from the weight. From these, I guess I had 2 4x8s in the trunk of the car. A little trunk and back seat. Yeah. So you got to really, really consider, you know, not only how you're going to store it, but how you're going to move these things around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, durability enters into it also. If you want to go with the, like, let's say, foam boards, adding a tin MDF under it might help to give some durability to it, but it also adds weights and more chance of warping.
Of warping, exactly.
Yeah, so you need to think about it before starting a project like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, if you're doing a custom board or like with a river or built-in scenery in it, do a drawing beforehand, before starting cutting your board. It might yeah. see.
Plans. It's all yeah. about planning. 9/10 of any hobby project is the planning stage. Let's be honest. It's not the doing, it's the making sure you know what you're doing.
And you have the right equipment and pieces to do it.
Exactly.
And also do it while the hardware store is open. So if you need something, you can yep. go the day you need it, not wait until tomorrow.
And
not
just postpone and yeah. cancel your plans. And
yeah, plan it right, and you shouldn't have to make any special trips to the hardware store.
But still.
Having said that, I've never successfully done a project without having to make a you know, oh no, I forgot this. And or, oh, that didn't work like I thought it was. I need something else.
Me neither. Yeah, always something you forgot.
Exactly.
I think we can go over how to build maybe a simple board.
Yeah.
So let's we'll discuss what we've got written down there, and then I'm going to just go over maybe what I did for my city board, because I think that could be useful for a lot of the 40K players out there who want something cost effective, mm-hmm. You know, for a base city board.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. So the boards I'll mention are the boards we use for Club Chaos when we run events. They are insulation foam boards. They are 1 inch thick. 2 inch would be better. It would be more durable and it would have less chance to warp and break. However, it takes a lot more space, double the space. And also it when you try to store it and when you try to move it. So we stuck with the 1 inch thickness. And also it's the 1 inch thick is cheaper than the 2 inch one. So all of those parts were considered when we made that choice.
Yeah, I mean, you're also storing 32 tables, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so at double the thickness, that's a huge difference. You know, 64 inches thick of foam plus spacers would be crazy if you're using 2-inch foam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, for sure. The other thing is, though, I think the 1-inch foam is harder to find. Right? I think, didn't you have to drive to Ontario to get it? Because in Quebec, we couldn't find it.
No, it was the half an inch when I did that trip. That was for another project.
Yeah, sorry. I'm mistaken. Yeah.
The 1-inch foam, it's insulation foam. You might not be able to find that everywhere in the States or in a place where the climate is better.
Yeah.
But up here, we don't have a problem finding it. The main drawback to getting that in Quebec is most of the insulation foams have ridges on the side to be able to
interlock
them. So you need to cut ridge on one side and glue it back on the other side to have a full clean side all around of your foam. While I know in Ontario you can get that same size but without the ridge, but here we can't. So depending on where you are,
yeah.
you might be able to get it not interlocking. So I think it depends mostly in the production level, the region. So in the States, you might be able to get it without the ridge.
Oh, because the R value you need for construction yeah. whatever is lower. It could be.
Exactly.
Not everyone has our crazy stupid winters.
Yeah. So the one we use are simple insulation boards with sand and paint and flux. So it's really easy to do. you have your insulation boards. Once the ridge part is getting rid of, and that problem is answered or
solved,
yeah. You first thing you do is you sandpaper and you sand the surface where the glue will be, the sand and your texture will be added, because most of the insulation board come with a like the reagent we have on resin and stuff like that. They have something similar, so stuff don't stick to it. So you need to sand it a bit so that the glue and the sand will adhere to the surface.
Right, and you want to use a coarser sandpaper, right?
Something texture. Like 100 or lower. You don't want to have a 200 or 300.
You're not trying to polish it, right?
Finishing.
Yeah, exactly. So you want to score the surface a bit to give the glue something to grab onto.
Mm. After that, you use a simple white glue like Elmer glue. You dilute it a bit with water. And what we do is we use paint rollers. And we work in team. It works better, but you can do that alone. By working in teams, we use a paint roller. We add glue from one side to the other. And as the glue is put on, someone behind is having a bag of sand and is putting sand on the still wet glue. And you want to do it all in one go, so you don't have... Because if you don't do it in one go and your glue finish drying, when you start over, there will be a small
ridge
on your sand, and you will see the line where the glue started again. So doing it in team... So you only need two people, and you just do it in one go for the first coat, and you're fine. After that, you wait a couple hours for the glue to dry. You do another mix of glue, but with more water in it, and you just do a second coat of glue over the sand. This will protect the sand, and it will prevent it from chipping off when you paint. Once that's dry, you simply paint, and that could be like the house paint you use for your wall.
Latex paint.
Latex paint. Don't use miniature paint. Perfect for that. Yeah, you can get that by the gallon. We bought, I think, 3 gallons for the old 32 tables we did. It wasn't didn't cost a lot.
And also for that paint, you can ask at the hardware store. You're gonna get that paint.
And you can color match. Yeah.
Yeah. You can get some leftovers, like, or bad matching or bad color match. So mm-hmm. you'll get some browns or something like that, dark color that sometimes they scrap, and you can get that for cheap.
Yeah, that's a good tip. Yeah, and for the paint, you simply paint over it, and after that, you dry brush with a mix of it and a lighter color to get some effects on your texture on your sand. And if you want, you can finish by adding some flocking to it, like static grass or different type of flocks.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to experiment with textures.
Yeah, absolutely.
More textures makes the table more visually appealing, just more interesting to play on.
Yeah, and you can mix coarse and fine sand to make a more texture too.
Mm-hmm. If exactly. you want to add roads or a dry bed river, maybe, you can just go over with a can of a spray can of anything. It could be varnish, paint, anything, and just go quickly in a line, and the foam will eat away, the spray will eat away in the foam just a bit to give like a small delineation and give space for your road or your river. So it will add the texture to it. And you do that for sure before you paint, before you add the sand and the rest of the steps.
Well, yeah, of course, yeah, because you want that sand to hide the edges of everything. Yeah.
And that's it. The process overall is long, but you don't have long time of working. It's just because there's so much drying time. But if you, I think overall it maybe takes an hour to do a full table.
I think there's one step you forgot though.
What? Yeah, go for it.
At the end, you need to varnish it to protect it.
No, because the latex paint is rough enough that you don't have a problem.
Yeah, latex paint is like amazingly... Well, first off, it goes on a lot thicker than a miniature paint, right?
Yeah.
And it's amazingly durable.
Go for one with a higher gloss finish.
Yeah, go for a...
Don't go for a mat for a ceiling or something like that. Go for a semi-gloss, and you won't have a problem. The paint never chipped off from any of our tables.
Yeah.
The foam will break before the paint will.
And if you really want, I mean, you can go with a semi-gloss, and if you find it's too shiny, you can clear coat after. You can, like, matte coat it with a cheap varnish from an automotive shop or from an art supply store. Yeah. You get Krylon spray matte varnish.
But we never really had any problem with that.
No, but if some people are
if you don't like the look or it comes out too glossy or too matte or anything.
Exactly.
You can change it. And I think overall that comes down to maybe, I think, $12 by panel. So around $25-$30 for a full table. Depending on the highest cost you have in all of that is the insulation board.
Exactly, is the foam
so
board.
So if you can get them in a special at a special price or a lower price because of a sale, something like that.
Well, the other thing is
you can
that
buy them in bulk and be fine.
Yeah, the other thing is that you're going to get enough sand, white glue, and paint to do more than one table.
Yeah.
Well, we bought one $5 bag of sand. We did 32 tables. All the terrain pieces that goes on it, and we still have probably a third of the bag left.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, if you're doing multiple tables, it becomes a lot cheaper because you get to amortize that cost over several several builds.
Same thing with the paint. A bucket of paint will do 15, 20 tables.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, don't go in and buy 1 gallon of paint to do a 4x4
table. Yeah, if you... they have the... What's the name? A quartet or something?
Yeah.
A quart. You can, for a single table, you buy the small sample size and you'll be fine. You'll have ample enough.
Absolutely.
So, that's how we do our boards for the club. So, how did you do your city terrain ones?
Oh, yeah. So... this is a great way to build a very simple city table for most people at a crazy low cost. It will require some saws. A table saw is the easiest thing I found to use. So obviously, if you're a youngster, get an adult to help you because you don't want to lose a finger. I started off. Now, I use 3/4 inch. I would say you go to 1/2 inch. It makes a lot more sense. It'll be a lot lighter. So 1/2 inch MDF. And I actually bought it in the offcuts section at the Renault Depot up here. So basically it was like junk wood. And I think they had a bunch of pre-cut 2x4 sections, which also made it easier to transport in my car. I want to say I paid $6 to $8 a piece. So you need 3 of those to make a table. To make a 6x4. I picked up 2 cans of Krylon Make It Stone paint.
The texture one, right?
Yeah, the textured paint. Any color, it doesn't matter. Just find the texture you like. You can tell by the cap what the textures are like. Pick one you like. And then a quart of, some sort of gray... I used gray anyway, house paint, whatever's cheap and has the right color for you. And basically what I did is I took those boards and I cut the 2x4s into 2x2s. And then I took the table saw and you can adjust the depth of the cut on the table saw. So I adjusted the saw blade. So maybe it was an 1/8 of an inch above the bench. So just barely coming out, above the table. And I set the guide to be, so they're 2x2s. So I set it to be 12 inches. And I did 2 passes on the board. Do one pass on the board, turn the board 90 degrees, do another pass. And that basically gives you a cross pattern on your board. So you do all your boards like that. You do 2 cuts per board. And then you readjust the guide to, I think it was 6 inches. Yeah, 6 inches. And then you do 4 cuts per board. So basically the outside cuts on each board. And what that'll give you when you lay them all out is it'll give you a bunch of square, like, raised pieces. They're only raised an eighth of an inch, so it just gives it gives a little bit of texture to the board. And those squares look like concrete slabs, or, you know, looks like they could be concrete slabs. And if you look at the way the Forge World boards are made for the Realm of Battle, they've all got this kind of... they look like they're made of little sectional pieces of concrete. So you make those cuts, and that's your foundation. And after that, you take the Make It Stone paint, and you do very, very light dustings of it on the board. And you have to be careful not to touch it, because the textured parts of that Make It Stone spray paint don't dry instantly. So if you happen to touch it, you'll flatten them out. So you do like a light misting from a pretty good distance, just to give a very light texture to the wood. You don't want to cover the whole thing like you're spraying a countertop with it or something, because it'll destroy the whole effect. You just want to give the boards a light dusting and give them kind of like a gravelly texture. Very, very fine, though. Once it dries, you paint them gray with your house paint. And if you put it down, you'll have something that looks like concrete. And then, of course, you can detail it. You can add... I added a highlight layer as well, just to, you know, make some pieces stand out more. And you can add some, like, say, maybe black spray paint or whatever from a distance. Do some blotches, make it look like burnt marks on the asphalt. And it came out really nice. There's a picture, I think, of Yeomanai playing on it that I posted on the Geeks of the North page at one point, or maybe in the Twitter feed. Maybe I'll find it and I'll link it to... I'll have Antoine add it in the show notes or something. We'll link to it.
Mm-hmm,
but it makes a great table. The total cost was probably $40 for I think I did a 4x8, actually. $40-$50. It took no time, and it's a good effect. And it's durable. The only thing is you have to worry about warping. What I did, though, to make sure they don't warp is I actually sit them flat because I have the space. So I sit these 2x2 tiles flat on the floor. And I bought at the hardware store these little, I guess they're silicone door stops for kitchen cupboards.
Okay.
So when the doors close, they don't hit the wood behind them.
Yeah.
And I just put one in each corner and one in the middle, and then I stack the boards.
No, yeah.
So because they're supported in the middle and on the edges, they don't really warp. And because they're flat packed, the weight of them, they keep themselves straight.
For sure. And it helps them not sliding when they are set up on your table.
Exactly. So they don't come apart.
So you don't need the locking mechanism.
That's right.
Because they won't slide easily like the plastic.
Yeah. And because they're so heavy, they don't slide easily. The silicone really bites down to whatever table they're on. Yeah, it worked. It worked really, really well. And I was very happy with it. In fact, I plan on making another few sets, I think, for the local gaming store. Because it'll give them a way to set up something that'll be durable. And then I made some modular pieces, actually, for the table out of MDF as well, where I took Masonite, actually. And I lowered the blade a little bit, and I etched it and basically made, like, layered pieces. How to explain this? So I took, like, say, a 10x10 piece, and then I made a bunch of cuts in it both ways to make it look like small slabs. Mm-hmm. And then I took an 8x8 piece, and I put it on top of the 10x10. I cut it the same way, and I put it on top of the 10x10.
Maybe like a really low-step ziggurat.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. And then what I did is, you know, I made them the size of my buildings, like my building bases, so that some of my buildings are raised up. Because like you're going upstairs to the buildings.
Give them more prestige.
Yeah, well, it gives the board more depth, right? And it didn't cost anything. It's a little time consuming, but you know.
But it comes down to what we said earlier. It's the time invested versus
absolutely
the quality versus of the look. Table. Versus the look and quality.
So it came out really nice, and it wasn't hard to do at all.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I mean, that's the problem with a lot of these boards too, is if you do, especially a city board, if it's just flat and you get a bunch of buildings on it, it's not that visually interesting. So I thought adding the little raised platforms, you know, throw some craters down, throw some color, like I said, scorch marks or whatever, it really makes it much more visually appealing. And because nothing's glued down or attached, you've got some flexibility for the next time you want to play.
Mm-hmm. So that's another nice option. And easy and cheap, too. I think that's about cover our gaming surface.
Yeah, topic. I think so.
We could probably go into custom boards and stuff like that, but that I think that's a topic in itself, how to build a board like that.
One thing is, and again, those boards are a lot more work, and it really, the biggest part is the planning.
Yes, absolutely.
And storage.
Yeah, well, usually those boards, if you're doing that, they're not going to be stored.
No, it's going to be a permanent fixture in your gaming room.
Exactly, or you're a gaming store and you want to have some fixed tables. So yeah, I guess that basically covers it. What about tools? Do we talk about that at all? Tools that that you should have for doing this stuff.
But you mentioned for the ones you're making, you need to have a table saw.
Yeah, a table saw.
But about that, the rest is mostly painting supplies.
Yeah, painting supplies.
And for the one we built, you needed to have a good X-Acto knife to finish the edges of the foam, and the rest was all painting supplies and sandpaper. So nothing special or anything. If you don't go into a custom board, you don't need anything more than that.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you go and buy because the foam, the pink or blue foam, it comes in 8x4. And if you don't want to cut it out, it's worth paying the $1 they charge you to do the cut.
Most places don't cut foams. They only cut wood.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah.
But the joy about cutting foam is that it's super easy. Yeah. All you have to do is score it and then snap it.
Yeah.
That's the big... Actually, I find a lot of people, they make that mistake when dealing with foam. And this is a little bit off topic, but whatever. They try to cut all the way through, where all you have to do is really make sure you've got a good straight cut, on the side, and you score it well, and then you can just snap it, and it'll break perfectly clean.
Make sure you have a new blade.
Yeah, that's one thing. When you're working with insulation foam, buy a pack of new blades, because the foams eats up the blade quickly.
Yeah, especially the cheapy X-Actos most of us use.
Mm-hmm.
The blades just dull so quickly. And as soon as you have a dull blade, you'll start getting catches. And your nice clean cuts won't be so clean anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, I guess that basically wraps it up. I'm interested to hear if anyone else has any ideas for, low-cost gaming boards that look good. If there's something we didn't talk about, something we missed, let us know. Post on Facebook.
Share that with us.
Also, if you have pictures of your gaming board, post them in the episode thread on Facebook or on the website as well. We would be interested to see what you come up with.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Steve, I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me on the show.
That's always a pleasure. Antoine, I'll see you... I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Absolutely. We'll see each other before, but we'll talk again.
We'll record in another couple weeks. Right. On that note, I guess we'll sign out.
Take care.
Bye, geeks.
Thanks for listening to Geeks of the North. If you want to contact us, you can email us at geeksofthenorth@gmail.com. Read our blog at geeksofthenorth.com, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geeksofthenorth, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks of the North. You can follow me, Paul, on Twitter at PRFilio, and Antoine at Eltonio Berg. See you in 2 weeks, geeks.
Thank you for checking out United Geeks Network Family Member. If you enjoyed it and are looking for other online media with a geek culture slant, head over to unitedgeeksnetwork.com, where you will find Zero Budget Geek, a YouTube channel covering board games, video games, and other geek stuff. You'll find Let's Play and how to play videos of different board games and video games, as well as reviews. The United Geeks Network. You can broadcast your geekiness at UnitedGeeksNetwork.com.